Welcome to the Federal Society's Practice Group podcast. The following podcast, hosted by the Federal Society's Corporation, Securities, and Antitrust Practice Group, was recorded on December 8, 2011, during a live teleforum conference call held exclusively for Federal Society members.
Welcome to the Federal Society's Practice Group teleforum. I'm Dean Reuter, Vice President and Director of the Federal Society's Practice Groups. Today, we're hosting a practice group teleforum on Securities and Exchange Commission versus Citigroup, a matter in which Presiding Judge Rakoff recently threw out a settlement agreed to by the parties. Our presenters today are Professor Jonathan Macy of Yale Law School and Professor Stephen Bainbridge of the UCLA Law School. Please note, as always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speakers. Professor Macy will be speaking first, followed by Professor Bainbridge. After opening remarks of about 5 minutes each, we'll have a little back and forth discussion, followed by questions from our audience. So, Professor Macy, please go right ahead with your opening remarks.
Well, it's a great pleasure to be here, Dean. Thank you so much for arranging this. And I'd like to also thank Steve Bainbridge, obviously, for participating in this with me. I'm always very pleased and interested to hear his insights, I gather, from earlier conversation that we may not be in complete agreement on all these issues today. So I look forward to hearing where we differ. I really would like to make three points about the recent SEC against Citigroup non-settlement. The first is the portions in the opinion that haven't gotten a lot of discussion, which reflect Judge Rakoff's views on the relationship between SEC civil proceedings and private litigation brought against the same defendants for the same alleged wrongdoing. And here Judge Rakoff makes it very clear, in a way that I find really kind of perplexing, that he sees a role for the he sees a role that the SEC ought to be playing as basically generating a record that the plaintiff's bar can then use in its private litigation against defendants. And that's never, to my knowledge, been a role that anybody seriously has advanced as an appropriate role for the SEC. That the notion was the SEC has its own agenda, it has its own enforcement schedule, and that it's not acting, kind of carrying the water, if you will, for the plaintiff's bar. The second aspect of this opinion that I think is worth contemplating, and I think really the core part of the opinion, has to do with the particular role that Judge Rakoff sees courts playing in the injunction context. Obviously, there are several components to the settlement that Citigroup had worked out with the SEC, and one of the components was money damages, and another was injunctive relief. And Judge Rakoff appears to be saying that injunctive relief is a little bit different, that he really sees an injunction, when a court agrees to an injunction, as being the court more actively participating in the litigation than when a court merely acquiesces in a money settlement. And he says, as a consequence, I don't think that I can really play this game of acquiescing in an injunction in these cases where the defendants are either admitting or denying guilt, because I don't have enough information to determine whether my use of the injunctive power, this equitable power of relief, is appropriate. And so that suggests at least the possibility that should the SEC want to go this way, it could mitigate the practical ramifications of this holding by backing off of its practice of insisting on injunctive relief, which is purely cosmetic, and the SEC doesn't really follow through very much, if at all, hasn't in the last decade, on its imposition of this injunctive relief, and just, you know, moves towards money damages. Third and last point that I want to make about the litigation is that it really does threaten what I would describe as the basic business model of the SEC. And what I mean by that is that if you look at the SEC's annual reports, and if you look at the SEC's testimony the Congress, in its defense of its kind of budget and growth strategy, they defend themselves very plainly. They market themselves as saying, our core business is enforcement. The measure of our success or the amount of lawsuits that we bring, not that they litigate, but that they bring, and the amount of fines that they bring in. And to the extent that the result reached in this decision makes it more difficult for the SEC to settle cases, it has the effect that Judge Coffey from Columbia has predicted, his prediction being that this will result in the SEC bringing fewer cases and litigating those cases, then this will result in a reduction in the amount of fines that the SEC collects and a reduction in the amount of cases that it brings. And that'll be a very fundamental change in the kind of basic way that the SEC does business, the sort of skill set of people within the SEC who are going to thrive in the litigation and enforcement areas. And so that could be quite an important ramification of the case. But those are my observations, and thank you for listening.
Professor Bainbridge, you want to go right ahead?
Sure. I'll just pick up on Professor Macy makes very good points. And for the benefit of those of you who are listening, Professor Macy has an op-ed on the Politico.com website that I commend to everyone's attention. It's an excellent analysis. Just picking up on his last point, the concern here, I think, that many of us have about Judge Rakoff's opinion is that it really will affect the SEC's ability to persuade alleged wrongdoers to settle cases and rather encourage wrongdoers to hold out and force the SEC to go to trial. And the reason for that, of course, is in part that if wrongdoers are required to admit that they engaged in wrongdoing, that could come back to haunt them in private party litigation and so on. And so the SEC's current policy enables it to bring more cases, settle more cases quickly, get relief, set up injunctive situations in which they can go after recidivists, attempt charges, and as a result, federal courts across the country have approved SEC settlements routinely for the better part of 40 years. Judge Rakoff is really something of an outlier here, and basically, for reasons that I find rather puzzling, has thrown a serious monkey wrench into the SEC's enforcement machinery. I think the practical result will be that many companies will refuse to settle cases if they're required to admit unlawful conduct that might expose them to additional lawsuits by litigants seeking damages. It loses us the advantage that a settlement removes uncertainty and can put money into the pockets of investors relatively quickly as compared to litigation. The SEC is an agency on a modest budget. Litigation requires enormous amounts of resources, which means, again, fewer cases and more wrongdoers basically going without any sanction. And so I think Judge Rakoff's opinion here, while it may play well with the Occupy Wall Street crowd, keeps asking why more Wall Street types didn't go to jail for the financial crisis, I think it's fundamentally unsound as a matter of policy. Thank you very much.
Professor Macy, you want to respond?
Yes, hi. I just had a very quick response, which is to say I might or might not agree with Professor Bainbridge, with Stephen. I think my agreement or disagreement really would depend on what assumptions we would share about what Citigroup did wrong. So, in other words, let's imagine that, and this is a possibility, that, you know, Citigroup really didn't do anything wrong. It was falsely accused. So it makes a litigation decision on the grounds that it's just the cost of settlement is lower than the cost of continuing to litigate with the SEC. Then, you know, maybe in that context, I don't think I agree with Professor Bainbridge on the grounds, and I don't think the SEC should be bringing those cases. And something that was in the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal that I thought was correct was they said, you know, in a way, possibly correct, they said, well, you know, this was a great idea, this decision, because it'll keep, it'll require the SEC to go after bad guys like Bernie Madoff and not established Wall Street players like Citigroup. And my response to that is I agree with the Wall Street Journal editorial if and only if we assume that Citigroup was not a bad guy like Bernie Madoff. But if you read the allegations in the SEC's complaint, the SEC, if you assume that those things are true, then I think that then they were like Madoff. The things they were accused of doing are quite horrific and immoral and not only unethical but and illegal. On the other hand, you know, so if they did these things, I think that the SEC should try the case to the extent that the Citigroup is not willing to admit or deny guilt. To the extent that Citigroup didn't do it, then the SEC shouldn't bring the case. So I guess what I'm groping for in a way are does Steve believe that, you know, the business as usual settling these cases as he correctly describes as the standard operating procedure for the last 40 years, is that okay against any fact pattern, or is it okay, does he like it more or less where the facts happen to be that the people are guilty, or the facts happen to be that the people are innocent, or maybe we're in a middle ground where we just don't know and can't find out? I tend to agree with Professor Bainbridge in the middle class of cases where nobody really knows what happened and reasonable people disagree, but where the facts of the matter can be proven that there's actual culpability. I don't think the SEC should settle these cases without getting an admission of guilt.
Yeah, if I could just respond very briefly, Dean.
Go right ahead, Professor.
I share that concern to a certain extent. I am more concerned about the SEC bringing marginal cases against individuals. And so, for example, imagine the SEC comes after me as charging me with insider trading, and suppose that I have a legitimate defense and suppose that, in fact, I did not inside trade, and if I went to trial, I would prevail. But the SEC says to me, we will let you settle the case without an admission of wrongdoing for simply disclosure, or rather disgorgement of your profits as opposed to seeking a treble money fine, which is a penalty that the SEC can seek. And I simply don't have the resources to fight the SEC. That's the kind of settlement that I think courts really ought to look at, where basically I'm settling because I don't have the resources to present a legitimate defense. And so I choose to settle simply because I can't afford to pay for a defense. In a case like Citigroup, where Citigroup clearly could have litigated this and chose not to, where they clearly had the resources to force the SEC to prove its case, I'm more inclined to think that a judge should be willing to let the two sides work out a settlement and give the settlement some deference. So I would be more inclined to support what Rakoff's doing in cases involving individual defendants of modest resources, but not in a case like this.
I'd just like to say that I knew you were going to say something brilliant on this call, and you have, and you just did. I want to make the very important qualifier, though, that in this case, it's very important to recognize that your point of distinguishing individuals from big company deep pocket defendants is a great one. But in this case, the SEC settled or agreed to settle with Citigroup. They specifically did not agree to settle with the individual defendant. And I think that if you look at the facts on the ground, while I agree with you completely as a normative matter, as a descriptive matter, the SEC tends to do exactly the opposite of what you and I apparently agree they ought to be doing, which is settling the cases against impecunious individuals. Those guys are happy to take on in court, and they settle the cases with the big guys that they don't want to tangle with.
I think you both have touched on this, but let me ask the question explicitly because it's posed in our description for this call. Who does have the ultimate responsibility for protecting the investor interests here and determining the enforcement regime? Is it the SEC? Is it the judge? Is it some combination of those two?
Well, I'll speak to that. It is, in a sense, a combination of the two. The logic of getting judicial approval of these settlements and using injunctions and so forth as part of this consent decree is in part that courts are supposed to police precisely the sort of thing that Professor Macy was just talking about and act as a check on abuses of the process by the federal agency. One of the reasons that we're having this phone call, however, is precisely because what Judge Rakoff is doing is so unusual. I was a federal district court judge's law clerk when I first got out of law school, and at that time, we had about 650 cases on our docket at any given moment in time, and a lot of them were class actions or shareholder derivative suits where the judge was required by law to approve the settlement. And in theory, that's intended to make sure that the judge has an opportunity to protect interests that are at stake in a class action, to protect the interests of members of the class who aren't before the court, in a derivative suit to protect the interests of the corporation and the stockholders who aren't represented, or in a in this kind of case, you're right, the judge has some role in protecting investors. The problem, of course, is that as a matter of docket management, if somebody came to us with a settled class action, got that case off of our docket, the judge was extremely reluctant to press too hard on that, just as a practical matter of docket management. And today, I understand, many federal district court judges have, 1,000 cases at any given time on their docket. And frankly, what Rakoff's doing is newsworthy in part because whether or not you think what he did was a good idea in this case or in general, one thing he is doing is doing what judges are supposed to do, but in that regard, bucking the trend. And it would be interesting to know what put this sort of bee in his bonnet that makes him want to take this in a way that, most federal judges, I think, would look at this sort of settlement and go, thank God I've got this case off my docket.
I think there's a lot of truth in that. I have a couple of little quibbles when a judge, generally speaking, is officiating at a settlement like this, it's really not a litigation context. It's sort of like the judge is performing at a wedding. And instead of marrying a husband and a wife, he's putting together a plaintiff and defendant who've come together to settle a case. And it's about as unusual as having a judge say, well, I don't think you two ought to get married. Rather, he's there to kind of sprinkle holy water and bless it. Now, as a formal matter, I want to be very clear that it is not legally required in this litigation that Judge Rakoff approved the settlement. They didn't have to go to Judge Rakoff. The reason they went to Judge Rakoff is because they wanted, as a matter of law, this settlement to serve as res judicata, to have some kind of precedential effect, and to get this that sort of final closure. I mean, the SEC could say, look, we're just not going to litigate this case anymore. They clearly do not need judicial approval to do that. And what Rakoff is saying essentially is, well, if you want the authority of the court and the power of the court to provide a res judicata effect to this opinion, then you got to give us enough information. That is not a wacky position. It's not a completely nutty position. Bainbridge is completely correct, of course, that it's very unusual. It's unusual for exactly the reason that he says, which is that, it's not clear what the interest of the judge is in this, given docket management concerns and the judge's personal interest in keeping up with the caseload.
Let's go to the first question from the audience.
My name is Bill Edlund. I'm an attorney in San Francisco. While the business model may be slightly different, the Department of Justice in the Antitrust Division has been remarkably successful in getting settlements which have carved out individual executives, and ultimately most of those carve-outs are folks that plead and go to do substantial hard time. The department has also generated very substantial fines. It's a real profit center. Maybe that's the kind of business model that the SEC should be following.
Either of you want to respond to that?
Well, only to say that the distinction here is that unlike the situation where the Department of Justice is bringing antitrust litigation, here the SEC doesn't have the authority to bring criminal charges. I don't think it's a bad model, actually, but the administrative law structure that the SEC has to contend with is a little bit different than what the antitrust division guys at the Department of Justice are dealing with.
Professor Bainbridge, did you?
I agree with John.
Okay, let's go to the next question.
Hi, my name is Rafi Melkonian. I'm a lawyer in New York. We've been talking so far as if Judge Rakoff's opinion is going to be the rule henceforth for the SEC, but I'm wondering what your thoughts on whether the SEC is going to seek appellate review and what the Second Circuit or, from some other case, another circuit might do with this kind of rule. Thank you.
Well, I was stunned when the SEC did not accept appellate review or did not pursue appellate review in the case this summer, SEC against Business Roundtable. So I don't think I'm really qualified to answer your very excellent, interesting question. My crystal ball is a little bit cloudy, but my very ill-informed guess is that they won't pursue this, but I'm likely to be wrong.
It is a very interesting question. I suppose that the SEC has to consider two things. One is, what would be the prospects of persuading an appellate court to take? Well, I suppose three things. If the judge doesn't approve the settlement, is there a final order that's appealable? I suppose not. I guess you'd have to do some sort of interlocutory appeal. What would be the appellate standard of review? I assume it would be abuse of discretion, which is not a standard that would give the SEC a lot of hope, I suppose. And finally, you want to take the risk of establishing a circuit-wide precedent if the court were to agree with the judge. So I guess I would be really surprised if the SEC appealed.
Oh, good. I have company. I like that. Now, another question, I suppose, is will the SEC go back and fiddle with this settlement and try again? That would be another strategy they might pursue.
And I think that's the most likely strategy. I think, you know, this is not the first time Rakoff has run this issue up the flagpole. He did so with a couple of cases earlier, the Bank of America case, and that hedge fund case last year. And in both of those cases, the SEC did exactly what John, I think, suggests. So I think John's comment is very prescient.
Well, and this is Dean. I suppose one alternative, the judge can't make the SEC enforce. They could dismiss. Is that right?
I don't know. I suppose so, but, you know, this is not the only case the SEC has in front of Rakoff at the moment, I believe. You know, I think they've got several others. And they do a lot of business in that federal district court. Do they really want to get on Rakoff's bad side more than they already are? I kind of doubt it.
All right, we have, it looks like, one more question from the audience, unless somebody else chimes in. Let's go to the next caller.
Yeah, hi, this is William Warren. I'm in Virginia. When you were both talking, you were, you know, distinguishing between, you know, what they should do in cases where the party's guilty versus cases where the party, you know, isn't guilty. But, I mean, in a lot of cases, that's really not decided without a trial. So I guess I'm just curious as to your thoughts on, you know, the Judge Rakoff in this case has looked at the allegations and concluded that at trial they are guilty and therefore a settlement needs to say that. I'm just, you know, to the extent that any litigation is, you know, you don't know how it's going to turn out until you've gone through it. It just strikes me as sort of a high threshold that he's setting for them.
You make a very good point, and you're kind of keeping me honest when I was making a comment that was a little bit fast and loose with respect to my three little categories. I agree with you that in many, if maybe most, but in many cases, they exist in this vast gray area, and I mean gray area in a sense of the sides really disagree about the facts and the cost of figuring out what really went on is going to be extremely high. But I do still kind of cling to my earlier position at the extremes to say, in some cases, the SEC or other plaintiffs are bringing suits for the wrong reasons, for PR reasons. They don't have a lot of facts, and they shouldn't bring those suits. And in some cases, they're settling for the wrong reasons, meaning that they are not allowing real bad acts to be punished. And so at those extremes, I'm pretty comfortable with what I said before. I certainly think you're quite right to say that there are going to be a lot of cases in the middle. And in those cases, I tend to think Professor Bainbridge makes an excellent point that, you know, the standard operating procedure of allowing those cases to be settled is not a bad idea. It's a good approach. In this case, though, I have to say, just speaking selfishly, I know that these cases aren't litigated for my benefit, but I think, like a lot of other people out here in the hinterlands, I was, you know, really interested to know whether Citigroup did these things that the SEC alleged. And I think that Judge Rakoff, really was kind of playing to the masses, and I put myself in the masses group, you know, maybe the inquiring minds ought to know, and the SEC ought to take that into account. I don't think that will happen very often, but I think that
you know, it one could argue that it happened in this case.
Like, we do have another caller with a question, so let's go to that next caller.
Hi, how are you? This is Isaac Gerdetsky. I'm from the Manhattan Institute. We've been doing quite a bit of work on this on point of law, and I just have a question that could be answered by both Professors Macy and Bainbridge. Do you see this as the beginning of a trend challenging the neither admit nor deny formula, and you know, what could be the implications of that? And also, what do you think Citi and the SEC have to do or change in their next settlement proposal to get Judge Rakoff's approval?
I would be surprised if it becomes a trend because, as I noted earlier, a lot of judges, at least unconsciously, and they may not do it consciously, but I think a lot of judges, at least subconsciously, are happy to see cases go away. And even though, as Professor Macy aptly describes this as, you know, sprinkling holy water on a marriage, a lot of judges are probably going to, you know, continue to take the don't ask, don't tell approach and just routinely sprinkle the water. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, we can debate. I think that, now, I can't see judges routinely devoting the kind of time and effort to these settlements that Judge Rakoff seems to be willing. You just don't see that happening in most courtrooms.
Professor Macy, you want to weigh in on this?
Well, I agree completely with what Professor Bainbridge just said. I think that you can't fight human nature, and there are a lot of good reasons for these settlements to be approved. This case is quite unusual, you know, in that it was so high profile and came out of this whole, you know, Steve mentioned Occupy Wall Street thing. So you get this odd constellation, you get this unique constellation of facts. So I think this case doesn't represent a trend. I don't think that's true. And I think that it clearly, in my view, doesn't represent a trend in litigation. I don't think it even represents a big trend in Judge Rakoff's courtroom. He does this more than most, but as Steve pointed out, it doesn't happen very often, so it doesn't take much to do more than most.
Do either of you want to speculate on what Citi and the SEC would have to do in going back to Rakoff to get a settlement approved in this case? Is it too late for that?
I don't want to speculate on that.
It's an interesting question. You know, as Steve mentioned, this dance has happened in Judge Rakoff's courtroom before with the Bank of America settlement that the clearly Gottlieb law firm had engineered with respect to the Bank of America's acquisition of Merrill. And you know, they'll have to make changes. But I really don't have enough information in detail to know exactly what the nature of the modifications would be. There'd have to be modifications.
Okay. Well, it looks like we've exhausted the questions from the audience. So on behalf of the Federalist Society, let me thank our call-in audience for those questions and for your attention. And Professors Macy and Bainbridge, thank you for your remarks and your responses today.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this Practice Group podcast. For materials related to this podcast and other Federal Society multimedia, please visit the Federal Society's website at federalsociety.org/multimedia.